Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Record. Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby. Doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I am JB, alone in the rugby dungeon. But not completely alone, because down the line is Tim Cocker. How are you, Tim?
Very well, thank you very much, JB. Thoroughly enjoyed an 80 minutes of intense rugby. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, and an absolute player, Phil, is in a hotel room in Earl's Court. I mean, what are you doing there, Phil?
What do you think I'm doing? I'm going to get a good 8-9 hours sleep, ready for a hard day on site tomorrow.
Oh, right. Are you allowed to be on site in the state that you're getting in tonight? In the morning?
Well, I did have... I'm kind of...
Well-rested, I mean. Thing. I mean, well-rested, that like that state.
Well, I will be very well-rested because I had my my second jab this evening, 10 minutes before kickoff in the Lions game.
Wow, look at that. Timing your jabs to not interfere with rugby. That is phenomenal.
It's been lovely knowing you, Phil. It's been lovely knowing you.
Exactly.
Thanks, mate.
Right, well, we've got a lot of rugby to talk about. We've got the Lions to talk about. The tour has finally started, but it's not the only tour in town because the week after next, tell me the date, Tim.
24th, 25th of July. But the 24th is the Saturday when the rugby happens at North Dorset Rugby Club in Gillingham. And it's also the day of the first test, which will be on a giant jumbo screen in the clubhouse with a massive crowd of people there, including us.
Including
and then
us.
On the Sunday, we've got a live show.
Yeah, we've got two celebrity coaches for our a celebrity coach for our sevens, a future Jamaican sevens great, I'm pretty sure, and a celebrity coach for our tens, who we will announce next week when we actually have 100% concrete confirmation. We finally have a sevens team out. We have one more space. If you're over 35, you're a vet, and you want to come down to, not an animal doctor, or a ex-on forces guy, a veteran, over 35, and you want to play in our tens. So if you are that one lucky person, get in contact ASAP. Right.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com is our email for that or anything else.
Exactly. Right. Finally, the Lions tour started today. I have waited for this day for a long, long time. Everything else has been superfluous. Today was the real start. Do you both agree?
Yes. 100%.
Well, of course, I totally disagree because it's been amazing and all of the coverage on the TalkSport network of which I've been part has been utterly essential up until now.
Well, I think the problem I've had is I haven't been listening to enough TalkSport because if I had, I think I'd already be in the Lions spirit.
100%, mate.
Agreed. I've only listened to a few shows, so I'm only semi-hyped up to this point. But I am now fully hyped.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was awesome today. So good.
Yeah, I said last week the tour hasn't captured my imagination, but out of nowhere, South Africa just decided to play everybody. I mean, I say everybody. It really was everybody. There were some guys on there. Can you imagine Owen Farrell turning out for the Saxons? Because that's what we just saw. Or Mario Itoje.
It's unreal, isn't it? I mean, that's I was watching that side, and yeah, I've got to say, there's a few people... The blonde number nine could really step up to the full Springbok side, I reckon, by the look of him.
He could be all right. Could he?
Yeah, those two second rows were handy as well.
Yeah, it was quite an incredible thing to see. Now, I am now thinking that South Africa have what we call the Leinster paradox, which is, what is more valuable, getting your game time together as a team or playing no rugby to make sure everyone is available for the test? Because a lot has been made of South Africa not playing much rugby as a team, and indeed they haven't. Some of the constituent parts have played rugby, Faf de Klerk being one. Everyone else who plays in Europe would be, you know, all the others. But a lot of these lads have not had that much rugby. So they find themselves in literally the exact same situation that the Pro 14 teams find themselves in, well, the Irish teams at least, when they're rotating. So again, we'll revisit it. What's more important, having everyone available or getting the cohesive squad together?
Yeah, and it's a point that Argentina, when they finally beat the All Blacks last year, they had no game time under their belt. They'd been in quarantine for a couple of weeks. They'd not even been able to train properly as a team for an enormous period of time. And yet they were fresh, they were firing. And importantly, we saw then, as we saw today, they were incredibly motivated to make a point. And this South Africa team, it seemed incredibly motivated.
Yeah, agreed. And also, before the game and in the build-up to it, Rassie Erasmus, he said he didn't really have concerns about game plan, style, tactics and all the rest of it, because I think that is a little bit like riding a bike, particularly when they had months together during the World Cup. They've been together for a while. They're all exceptional players. That will be fine. He said the main focus for him was match fitness. And I think you saw a little bit of what he was talking about there, because as much as the Lions definitely improved in the second half, I think the lack of game time took its toll from a match fitness perspective on South Africa. So frightening for the Lions. They will be much, much better. Well, that's a question. Who will throw your paradox question back at you in another way? Who will benefit most from that 80 minutes? Whose improvement could be greater off the back of it?
Well, I mean, the Lions need to improve more, I would say. Looking at these two teams, South Africa, the first 20 minutes, I thought Lions were in for an absolute hiding. Now, the fact that the Lions dealt with it, and this is a strong Lions team. Any Lions team is a strong team. You've got to remember that. Any Lions team is a very, very strong team. But it's not their test team. On the other hand, this is not South Africa's test team. And even though it is a draw, well, sorry, it's not a draw. Even though it was a win to South Africa in the end, my feeling is both teams will feel fairly okay about how this turned out in a weird way. Because I don't think after the first 20, the Lions thought they'd even be in it.
Yeah, you could certainly have seen it going that way. I mean, it looked, it was totally dominant that first half for South Africa. And even at the end of the first half, where the Lions got deep into South Africa's 22, South Africa conceded two yellow cards and they still held the Lions out. And you thought at the end of that period of play, when Lions went in at halftime 17-3 down, you thought, God, they've missed their chance and South Africa will get stronger from this point.
Yeah.
Actually, testament to the Lions that they did come back into it, testament to their fitness and conditioning. And South Africa, I won't say struggled in the second half, but some of that lack of game time took its toll. And also, I mean, this is a South Africa A side, albeit in name only, but also it's not a full test side. It is, I don't know, 60% of a full test side, something like that.
It's almost there, isn't it?
I was thinking, actually, I think that it's fairly comparable, the number of players that will come in for the test, 15 or 23 for South Africa and for the Lions as well. I think there was enough of the starting Lions test side that actually it was fairly comparable.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
Who is it that you'd be replacing in the Lions team? Who doesn't deserve to be there at the moment if it's a test tomorrow?
Well, a lot of it's just you're coming down one side, the marginal calls in a lot of cases. Like Lou said, the first number one would be one of those. I think I would just edge Rory Sutherland over Wyn Jones, but I could see it going the other way.
I thought Wyn Jones was brilliant.
For example.
Yeah.
He was decent today, and I thought Ken Owens was really good, but I think he'll just come down on the side of Jamie George.
Yeah, I mean,
and similarly, you could go Mako, because Mako looked great when he came off the bench today.
He did, he did.
Slightly bigger boy as well. You know, Mario, Ian Henderson. I thought Josh Navidi was good. Josh Navidi fills me with confidence when he's 3 yards away from a breakdown. I just think he's brilliant.
Yeah, Navidi was good. But
Ty Burns has been so good. And Courtney Laws has been one of the best players on tour when he's played.
Yeah, that's a great shout. Lots of praise for Tom Curry today. But if anyone is used to wrangling large South Africans, I guess he would fit that bill.
he was awesome.
I thought Tom Curry was the best player on the pitch. I thought Tom Curry had a magnificent game today.
Yeah, him closely, but him or Itoji were both immense.
Well, give the devil his due. What did Stephen Jones say on Twitter the other day? He said, "All that Tom Curry needs to do is show up." My word, did Tom Curry show up?
I said a long time ago. I think you would be hard pushed to find someone to knock him off either the 7 or the 6 or indeed the 8 shirt. But I was certain for a long time that Tom Curry would be starting in a test if he was fit.
Yeah,
he proved it today that he was magnificent.
But it's testament to Hamish Watson that he needed to prove it, though. I guess that's how good he's been.
I look at Hamish 100%. Watson. I look at Curry. I look at Navidi. I look at Byrne. I'm thinking all of these guys. Or test quality. I mean, they're obviously test quality because they're internationals, but I think it goes back to what you said, Tim. It's such a fine margin between any of them. Yeah, Tom Curry was great today. How good has Hamish Watson been for the last 3 games, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been sensational. I mean, it will come down to whether size. He wants to kind of more fetchers, smaller, slightly more dynamic players, or he wants a taller, bigger-bodied additional line-out option. And he Gatland is blessed because he can go either way and have world-class talent with depth as well.
Yeah. What way do you think he'll go and what way would you go? Because I think it's not just that back row balance. I think that will be indicative of the way that he plays. And I've got a feeling he might go a little bit more gung-ho than I'd thought he would for the tests.
I'm with you. I've thought for a long time, I was certain for a long time that he was going to play Mauro or Byrne or Laws at 6. And I think maybe now I'm seeing it a bit more in the flesh. I think he might go Curry and Watson or yeah. Curry and Navidi or possibly, albeit it's unlikely, Curry and Simmons.
Do you know, last Lions tour was much easier to predict. Because Gatland took his attack coach from Wales, and you could just think, well, what do Wales do? What does he like? And, you know, invariably, you'd be right. I don't think it's at all easy to tell what he's going to do, because the defence coach is obviously from Scotland, the attack coach is from Scotland. You can see things which I haven't seen from a Gatland team very often, which is very late arriving around corners on attack. They are constantly coming very, very deep, which, you know, it isn't the... so-called Gatland ball of old. This is very much more expansive and it's very much more based on structure. So, and I don't mean the negative type of rugby by numbers. Not that that is negative, but you know what I mean. So it's going to be much harder to actually work out what the intentions are to pick this team.
Yeah, I think one of the areas for the Lions that they will change will be the centres. I think Bundyaki and Chris Harris played well.
Mm.
But I think they are more of a route one, more slightly more limited than you can potentially have. I was expecting Henshaw to be playing in the test match, subject to fitness. And I know Daly kind of came on to cover back three. Yeah. I thought Daly had a brilliant game. I thought he played really, really well when he came on. Made some big hits, made some good yards, kicked intelligently, hands were good.
Yeah.
So he might be. He might be playing his way into a starting jersey, maybe in the 13 channel, or maybe he's just too useful as the utility back if you go for a 6-2 split.
Am I crazy to say this, but I can draw direct comparisons to what Chris Harris can do for the Lions to what Lukarno Am does for South Africa.
Yeah, I can see that. Big strong boy, defensive leader, hard runner.
And then just let's...
Has got... Has, he's got the option for hands, but he's not his primary. He's not like a Henry Slade style 13.
Yeah, and it just lets Damien D'Alande do all sorts of other great stuff. Just be a hard carrier. In fact, D'Alande and Lacorne Wham are not dissimilar to Aki and Harris today.
Yeah, you've got a kind of match up there, haven't you?
Mm.
Kind of well matched.
Yeah, but I'm not necessarily saying this at Chris Harris, because I think he's been really, really good, as he was in the Six Nations. I'm more sort of picking up on exactly what Phil said about the two centres. There actually was quite a few times where they went for the outside channel, and sometimes they got a bit of space, but they never really stretched that South Africa defence to breaking point. And that is why I actually agree that those two will not, cannot, should not start the test match. And also, I do think it is a limitation of Chris Harris.
So
he's in attack with the ball.
I think you can have one, yeah, but not both.
That's exactly what I was about to say. We can have one, but we can't have both. Now, the question then becomes, like, who are we bringing in and why are we bringing them in? Like, who are the other guys that will replace either 12 or 13? Because it will be one, but not both, I think.
Well, Henshaw is going to make his return at the weekend. He will be available to play on Saturday. And if he plays anything like Robbie Henshaw can play and proves his fitness and his touch, then he's starting in the test match either at 12 or 13.
So which one, Tim? Who would you rather pair him with?
He can do both.
I think I would go Farrell 10, Henshaw 12, and...
Then you're pushing Daly or Harris, really.
Yeah, then I guess Daly or Harris. Or will he go bigger, Farrell, Henshaw?
That's what I feel he will do. I think it might be bigger, Farrell, Henshaw, unless Magic Marcus just keeps stepping up. Every time he played, I mean, he played in the semi-final, he gets to a final, he plays in the final, he gets an England cap, he gets a Lions call-up. What's going to happen when he gets a Lions call-up?
Exactly. You know, that Scottish system sometimes relies a lot on the genius of Finn Russell, but there'd be no Finn Russell. Who's the most Finn Russell-y on occasion?
Marcus Smith.
Yeah. So maybe, I mean, you could see an argument for all three of them. So you could see Dan Bigger and Farrell starting with Marcus Smith on the bench. Mental, but it could happen.
So my money would be on Bigger, Farrell, Henshaw. Provided, because obviously Bigger was supposed to start this game, took a knock, but it's not supposed to be serious as I understand it. Henshaw is recovering from a knock. So that would be my predicted choice, providing those two are fit.
I can go with that. And the whole thing, same with the back row, and you can maybe not have a bigger man in the back row, because, well, Tom Curry's a big man anyway, but you can spread some of that workload and some of the things that those guys would do elsewhere in the team. And I wonder if you did go with those three, that actually elevates Duane van der Merwe into a test starting jersey on the wing, because you can use him in different ways.
Yeah,
to do
he's been
jobs.
Really good so far. Josh Adams has been really... I mean, yeah. Before we just go on to the wings, there was one guy playing today who looked like a 20-year-old in his second season of professional rugby, I've got to say. I thought Lewis Rees-Sammet did not do particularly well. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Where did everyone go then?
I don't know.
It froze for me. I don't know if it was my end or your end.
Yeah.
Right, let me say what I just said again. So, yeah, okay. In my mind, there was one guy who looked like a 20-year-old in his second season of professional rugby. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought Lewis Rees-Sammet was not particularly as effective as he has been.
I tend to agree from what I've seen of him on this tour as well, not just necessarily in this game. And he's undoubtedly an amazing talent, and he will continue to develop over the next, 5 to 10 years. He will probably not 5 years until he will even be in his prime, like true prime.
Mm.
But he's, I mean, the step up two years ago when he was playing literally schoolboy rugby, the step up to this is astronomical.
Isn't it amazing?
He seems like one of those players who has always been absolutely amazing when he's able to find the space. At this level, he just will not be able to find the space.
No,
he will get there.
And he's even been amazing for Wales.
It takes time.
you know, if you're going to find your limit, it's not a bad place to find it at 20 years old. Yeah, you know, against South Africa.
I think he's found his limit of an acceptable hairstyle as well.
Yeah, that is really right at the limit. Right, I mean, such a handsome boy too. Like, why ruin your hair?
Speaking of which, there was some brilliant comments by Lewis Rees-Sammet's teammates. Are you still there, guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. It's just the picture froze for a second. There were some brilliant comments on Lewis Rees-Sammet's Instagram channel, where he posted a picture of himself. Nice black and white photo of him looking pensive in the changing room taken by someone that he posted. Tom Curry in the comments underneath said, girls will love that. But that wasn't just Tom Curry going, oh, basically, you look really nice, Lewis. Girls will love that. Tom Curry put that comment in quotation marks, which suggests that somebody else had said it and quite possibly Lewis Rees-Sammet himself.
Wow. Oh no!
That's what I love about rugby banter. There's nothing which is really off limits. You know, you'd have thought that the professional sports might tone it down a bit, but no. It's only about three or four sentences away from utter meltdown.
Yeah. So I'm here for Lions teammates throwing each other under the bus on social media. I think it's hilarious.
100%.
Absolutely.
Here is an interesting thought. Adam Beard, when he arrived on the scene, was remarkably effective. And he might not do as many things well as, say, Mauro Itoje. But to do what he does against those driving mauls, I think he might be playing himself into a test start. I really do.
And he is a tight head lock as well.
Yeah.
As in, he's just shy of 130 kilos. He is enormous.
Is he that big?
He's Don't forget, he's 6'9".
Good God, I didn't know he was like that substantial. I knew he was tall. But to neutralise the maul, that is one hell of a thing. That's a rare skill.
Yeah.
You're right. And spare a thought for Hendo, because Hendo was looking like Marrow's partner for the tests. And then Alan Wynn does The Undertaker and comes back to life. And
yeah.
And now Adam Beard comes out of nowhere and just has a blinder.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because, of course, Alan Wynn has returned. What's more surprising? Conor Murray getting the captaincy, Smith being called up, or Conor Murray losing the captaincy?
Alan Wynn coming back is remarkable in that space of time.
18 days. 18 days.
At his age as well.
I wonder. Right,
I know it.
Go on.
I was going to say, I know he's not 100 years old, but he is in the twilight of his career. It takes me 2 days to recover from like a kind of lightweight leg session at this age, and he's recovering from a dislocated shoulder.
Can I make a very conspiratorial point here about Alan Wynn Jones?
Is it to do with Fijian witch doctors and healing leaves?
Not far from it. But if he was a younger man, say 30 or say 28, something like that, and he knew he had a good few years ahead of him and he had a serious shoulder injury, which could be played through potentially, but needed a surgery or it just wouldn't be wise. It could cause further damage. Maybe he wouldn't be back. And because this is basically the old war horse on his last hurrah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's playing through something that he shouldn't play through. Or at least I can imagine that situation arising. A shot of this or a painkiller here or there. Why not? It's literally your last chance.
I can see the logic and I can certainly see the mentality. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that is what's happening, but yeah, I can understand that mindset.
Would you do it?
100%.
I would
do
it.
If I were him, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that is the case. I've heard nothing like that. It does seem like he's just recovered. But, you know, that's the conspiracy theorist in me.
Yeah, definitely.
As you say, we'll get onto the wings and stuff, but I just forgot that we should, as well as congratulating South Africa for playing together as a team for the first time since the Rugby World Cup final, we should congratulate the director of that broadcast for their first ever game in broadcasting.
Yeah, some remarkable camera work. Unbelievable camera work, some might say.
Yeah, quite incredible. But congratulations on their first ever match.
Yeah,
first ever time watching or recording the game.
First ever time with a camera.
I also hope that the not necessarily all of the decisions, but I hope that the way that the referee and TMO approach this game is indicative of what we're going to get for the Test series, because they let the boys play.
They did a bit, didn't they? There were a few things in there, like there was a seatbelt tackle, there was a knock to the head, there were a few things in there which they just let play, because the way I was looking at it, this is full on absolute carnage. They weren't high, as in both players were not upright. It was mostly during the phases of play very close to the line when everybody is 4 foot off the ground. And I just thought, yeah, he's just letting them get on with it. There's no foul play. The only one which deserved some action was Faf de Klerk. You can't close your eyes and keep your hands by your side. I mean, I understand why he did it, been 5 foot, whatever he is, but you can't do it. You can't say you've not been reckless with your eyes closed, looking the other way.
That Faf one was ludicrous, and it's a great example of a point that you make, Tim, which is if Faf had been... if that was Eben Etzebeth doing that, and he's whatever he is, 6 foot yeah. 8 and 125 kg, there is no way on earth that is only a yellow card. If 12 out of the 15 Springboks on the field had done that at that point in time, it is a red card every single time.
Well,
Faf got away with it.
I'm lucky enough to see Faf on a fairly regular basis. And I think he does benefit from the Richie McCaw thing, which is when Richie McCaw steals a ball, no matter what angle it is or how illegal it is, the ref goes, oh, it must be legal. Richie McCaw did it. So Faf will race offside. He'll be in the opposition, the opposition attacking line. He'll do all sorts of things which physically aren't really possible, but the ref goes, oh, I guess I've missed something there. So, yeah.
He got lucky in that, because it could have been a red card and it could have been a ban.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I could have given a red card for that. I've seen red cards given for stuff like that. I completely agree. Question for you guys. We've not really spoke about the game, because I guess anyone who's just watched it has watched it and knows what happened. So, which are the highlights in this game which make you want to see more of this?
I'll answer that in a slightly different way. Mm. There was quite a lot of kicking. Some of it very good, well executed. Some of the box kicking and the kick chases, particularly early on for the South African side, where, I mean, Liam Williams got nailed a couple of times, Anthony Watson got nailed, Lewis Freesamit got nailed. Some of that was amazing.
Yeah.
But some of the kicking was poorly thought through and poorly executed. And that's from both sides. Mm. Farrell, obviously the charge down for the Nkosi try, but a few other times he looked like he'd run out of ideas or run out of options.
Yeah,
that may be a combination. I'm not entirely blaming Farrell there. There's no limitations outside him because of that.
Agreed. It looked like he had to sort of do dummies and pump fakes a little bit. Because
I wondered if that was part of what he was meant to do, though, didn't you?
Well, I think it was a little bit kind of what Phil hinted at there. I think the combinations and the players gelling together, it felt like Bundiaki and Chris Harris were not on the same wavelength, and they overran him quite a few times, so he had to go behind them.
So actually, yeah. Okay. So the way I saw that, because he almost always pump faked, so American, dummied. Because he always dummied, the short option and then threw the long pass across the face to a shape coming on the corner of the first pod, if that makes sense. So I thought what he was trying to do, I thought that was kind of on purpose, actually.
So I would agree where he had the option out the back, but there was a few times where, and I'm not just blaming Chris Harris and Bundiaki here, it's a combination of lots of things, plus other players in channels, but there's times where he would do exactly what you're describing and be looking for that option out the back, but someone has mistimed a run, either one of the backfield players or someone who's running the dummy lines. And so he was left with no option. There was no pass on. So he carried a couple of times and then went for some speculative crossfield kicks a couple of times. And just the whole thing, it looked like it wasn't quite as sharp as it should be.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't. It's a weird one. Farrell is obviously not Finn Russell. I don't think I need to explain why. But that Gregor Townsend system, it does seem to work quite well for him. Because, he doesn't have that natural flair that Finn Russell does. But he does have a very nice pass. And he can pick out those options rather nicely. Now, Finn Russell does have a little bit of magic on top of that. But I think Farrell is fairly well suited to it.
I think there might be an element of it being the thing to describe him being a referred pain. Like, quite often, you have a bad ankle. And actually, when you get to the bottom of it, there's an issue with your hip, which gets magnified down your leg. I think it might be an element of that. And when you listen to what Connor Murray and Maro Itoje said after the game, and Warren Gatland, they said the breakdown in the first half was not good. We were not tidy enough. We didn't look after the ball. We didn't get quick ball. And then you start going, in that first half, Owen Farrell found himself out of options and players were not really running the lines at the right end, being in the right place at the right time. And I think it might be a referred element of just them not taking care of business at the breakdown.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was watching the South African breakdown and I thought they were really efficient. So they were presenting the ball quite long. When they weren't presenting the ball long, they always had two men over. When they did, they always had one man over. When they had the one man over, you could see that they were latching on basically the arse of the guy going over. So they've always got... So they could always burn a man and then the second man would come in and replace him. I thought their breakdown for a team that haven't been in play for a while was remarkably efficient.
Yeah, South Africa were really good at disrupting and securing ball at the breakdown, particularly in the first half.
Well, my two moments from this game, which makes me absolutely want to see more, were the 30 phases where the best players from the British and Irish home nations couldn't get 5 inches of the territory just before half-time.
Yeah.
I thought that was absolutely awesome. I thought it was awesome in two... Yeah. Like, just before I move on from that, is 2 yellow cards worth it not to concede up until half-time?
Yes.
One maybe, not two. It's a weird one because they came away with no points, but I think they might have come off the field thinking that they won the exchange.
Yeah, and finishing the half with a score is a big psychological boost.
Yeah.
I genuinely think had the Lions scored then and gone in 17-10, they win the test. I think that was a match-winning yellow card, that second one.
Oh, the way I look at it is, if the Lions had scored and the 2 yellow cards had been given, basically beat down, Lions have absolutely battered South Africa in that situation. For 30 phases with no yellow cards for South Africa to not concede, obviously, games that match South Africa, because of 2 cards, I just see it like honours even. Maybe even slight advantage for the Lions.
But for two yellow cards, and then Lions got the... Obviously, because there's a penalty for the second yellow card, Lions then have another chance to score, and they failed.
Yes, that is
true. It's the Lions failing to score against 13 men after 30 phases. Preceding both yellow cards, that's what does it.
Yeah, that is also true. And the second thing, which
what was your second one?
Tom Curry grabbing Alstead. What I love that name, Alstead, and just marching
Reinhard Alstead.
Yeah, and just walking him back, talking smack to him, presumably saying, "I manhandled Dupreez all day long. You're nothing, pal. You should see what I do to Lude."
I think my moments, there was one just with the physicality in general, and I love Mako Vunipola coming on and putting in a whopping tackle. That was cool. But Cheslin Kolbe, only had five carries in the whole game.
No, he didn't. And surely not.
He did. He had 5 carries in the game. Jesus. And made the game-breaking contribution.
Yeah, I love seeing Cheslin Kolbe play. And the two moments, one for him and one against him, that when Chris Harris is, He's on the kick chase, and Chris Harris is comfortable. He knows he's got the space. He knows he can cover the space outside him until he can't, until Chisholm Colby just steps, accelerates, and is round him in a flash.
He went on Mario.
That was amazing. But then Chisholm Colby, Mako nailed him.
Yeah.
That was the tackle I was referring to. Mako nailing Colby.
Yeah. So he's gone around Chris Harris. He's gone around Mako. Sorry, he's gone around Mario. Mako's the one that gets him. Are we going to see more Mako on kick chasing?
100%.
It's the only way forward. It's the only way forward.
Who's your back three for the tests?
Back row or back three?
Back three, because the only person, because Henshaw's one name we haven't seen, and Hogg as well, because Hogg, the reason that we haven't seen Hogg is because Gregor Townsend was the positive test. He's been isolating in his room.
Yep.
And Stuart Hogg sits next to him on the bus. And they all have to sit next to the same person every time.
Oh God, how awful.
For this exact reason, close contact tracing.
I'll tell you what though, fair play. They are getting their games done. So as much as I bemoan it, you know, what can you do? Go on, Bill.
Now we have seen Hogg on the first Sharks game, haven't we? Because he chased
down. Yes,
he chased down the six,
the number eight,
one of the Sharks' back rowers when he broke, and that was an amazing bit of speed.
We have seen him, and I assume he'll play this weekend, hopefully. But I'm saying he starts the test match regardless. He's starting.
Yes,
and before the tour, I thought it was the three fullbacks would be the back line: Liam Williams, Anthony Watson, Stuart Hogg. But I'm going Josh Adams and Duan.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, based on this tour, same thing.
So I think it will be Josh Adams, but I think Anthony Watson, providing his ankle is okay, and he did run it off.
Yeah.
But I think Watson has shown enough. He's such a threat when he gets a little bit of space.
He's very good.
Yeah, the reason I say Duan and Josh Adams is just based on what they've done on tour. But then thinking about it, who have they played? Absolute nobodies. So
fair point.
Very good point. When it comes to the actual, you know, the tests, we're gonna have to go back and have a look at their CVs. Josh Adams,
you're right. But particularly when you tie in the point that Phil made about, well, you both made about Lewis Rees-Sabbitt, incredible as he is and amazing as he will be, being exposed a little bit. And you could see that happening to Duan van der Merwe as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
albeit,
Josh Adams, Anthony Watson for me. And I don't know about fullback. I mean, I could go with Duan and put Anthony Watson at fullback, but I just feel he's too good on the wing. Although, apparently, he likes fullback more than wing. I don't know.
Fullback is Hogg for me.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me doubt that. Duan is an interesting one because Duan is such a unique threat on the wing. He's such a dangerous runner in open space and, importantly, when you're playing the Springboks in heavy traffic, that I can see him being used, but he does create weaknesses elsewhere because of his defence and the way he reads the game.
Mm. Yeah, it's true.
So I wouldn't start Duan, but I could understand why Gatlin might.
Well, that's why we're not paid hundreds of thousands of pounds to pick the Lions team.
Yeah, 100%. So basically we're saying we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
We're paid millions to do podcasting instead.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Double, at least double for this Lions tour what Gatlin gets each.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, we've done the Lions. Who have they got next on Saturday?
Stormers.
Are the Stormers going to be any good?
Without their Springboks?
No.
Probably not. They'll probably be about the same level as we've seen already.
Fine. We don't really need to worry too much about that then. Has anyone...
No, but that was awesome. Go on, JB. You were going to move us on to... I know what you're going to ask.
Yeah. Has anyone seen the proposals by World Rugby to reinvigorate the game?
So is this the open letter from Bill Beaumont to make rugby the most progressive sport in the world for player welfare?
I mean, I obviously get terrified when anyone mentions the word progressive. But progressive for welfare, I mean, maybe if you say it in its literal sense, there's some sense to... I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know. My initial take is I'm very, very worried about the whole thing.
Anything in particular that worries you?
Oh, yeah, loads. I've thought about this. This isn't a thought which I had this isn't a thought which I had because of this latest review. It's one I've had independently to it from before. And there are a couple of people that I don't like. Okay, I'll give you an example. I don't like trade unions very much. I don't like them at all. But I really respect them. So I really respect the fact that there is somebody out there who will defend the indefensible. Time and time again. Doesn't matter what their members get up to, guess who's going to stand up and defend the indefensible? And that's trade unions. I mean, that's a really, really important function that they do. Whether you like them or not, they've got an integral part to society. Now, the unions need to start behaving a little bit more like trade unions and start defending the sport and not kowtow all the time to every single demand, because a lot of these demands are completely insincere. I do think that we need to take care of the professional game. But if you look at what FIFA say about football, they say that the game at the top level should represent the game at the bottom level. So now what we've got is a pro game which is so grossly out of proportion to the grassroots game that the grassroots game has got to follow in the steps of the pro game in order to make it safer. And I don't think that they are remotely similar. You're ruining the experience. And I also think there's a slight movement here from people outside of the sport to dilute the culture of rugby, not just the sport, but the culture. And part of the culture is risk-taking. It is the idea that we go out every weekend and we take risks with our bodies, with our health. And, of course, at the amateur level, you can get a very serious injury, but you never need to play again. You never need to play again. I would like to see the unions, and particularly the RFU, just defending the game. You know, this is the game that we want to play, the game that we love, and we're going to defend it come hell or high water, because as soon as you give an inch to any of these lobbyists, any of these external pressure groups, the Alison Pollocks or, you know, whoever else it is, you lose something very, very important which the game has. And each little piece individually doesn't matter, but when you combine them all, it's an absolute nightmare.
So are you worried from a personal perspective that the game that you play and you've loved playing, and all of us love playing, is going to change to a point where you don't like it?
It already has.
And if that...
I mean, it already is.
Well,
I know
right now it is a totally different game for other reasons. But what's your...
Seatbelt
tackle.
What's
the thing? Like,
I'll start with the seatbelt tackle, right? So the seatbelt tackle will happen numerous times in amateur rugby games, and I don't think that any concussions come from seatbelt tackles, or very, very few. But of course, they're just trying to lower the tackle area over and over. And so it's gone from no touching the head, it's gone from occasionally lightly touching the head, to shoulders, to nipple height. There's a trial going on at the moment, which is shorts for kids. This is absolutely nuts. Like, we know what we signed up to, and we'll play it. And the theory is that if we don't change it, people will start leaving in their droves. Well, they're leaving in their droves because we're sanitizing the sport to the point where, you know, there's just nothing, there's going to be nothing to it. And if we look at sports where every sport, to be fair, every sport is suffering for numbers, every sport is suffering for participation. Clubs up and down the country, not just sports clubs, but institutions and clubs up and down the country are suffering for membership. Weirdly enough,
yeah,
the sport that doesn't suffer for at least viewership and probably participation too, in fact, I know not for participation, is mixed martial arts. Because everybody knows that there's a risk involved. And it, you know, through the pandemic, it grew an awful lot. It just continues to grow because they're unapologetic about what their product is, what their game is, who it appeals to. And that's exactly what the union should be doing, which is standing up for the bloody sport, not chipping away at it at every possible opportunity.
So I've gone, Phil.
I was going to say, more seatbelt tackles, please, at amateur level.
Yeah, well, the problem is, once you say no seatbelt tackles, you can't then go and say, yeah, can we have seatbelt tackles back? I mean, can you think of one safety law which has been rode back?
So I can sort of hop in here, and I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying, JB, absolutely. And in a lot of ways, I agree. And I think I have to acknowledge that part of that, and this is probably the case for you, is, like most people, don't like change.
No.
And you prefer things the way that you enjoyed them and you remember them. I'm trying to step outside of that and see a broader picture. And I can understand why you would want to take reasonable steps to make the game safer to some degree, more accessible, certainly. But that word reasonable is absolutely essential. Totally understand what you're saying, that I think that there are steps taken far beyond it. And as we're all parents, my kids are slightly older than yours, but I'm sure you've seen what I've seen. Is I think this is what we're actually talking about is not just rugby. This is this is across the board. And you mentioned the word risk, JB, and whether you look at the response to COVID, whether you look at parenting, like, you know, parents would not dare let their kids climb a tree now, and we have indoor play areas with everything soft and no sharp edges and all the rest
it's
of it.
True.
You go to university and there are safe spaces and trigger warnings. There is not enough acceptance of and personal calculation of risk, and rugby needs to only take reasonable measures and not step beyond that. And as for the cultural stuff, I'll just chuck in things like, I can understand why some people might feel excluded from rugby because of this quote unquote toxic masculinity. I would say the cure for toxic masculinity is not less masculinity, it's more masculinity.
Well, hang on. Yeah. If you want to see...
I've chucked a lot on the wall there.
If you want to see a real example of toxic masculinity, it's cowards. I mean, that is the ultimate form of toxic masculinity. And you don't find many of them on rugby fields, truth be told. Just going back to the whole risk thing, okay? It is something inside, particularly young men, I don't mind saying that, it's something inside young men that seek risk and they seek danger. And by trying to appeal to everybody, rugby will eventually appeal to nobody. I've seen this because I've been to, you know, mixed martial arts clubs, I've been to jiu-jitsu clubs, and you can see where these people are going. You know, it all goes around in cycles. There will be some people playing, but it won't be the same people. And I guess if the authorities in rugby want to appeal to just different people and gut the game of who would like to play it now and replace them with other, you know, people who aren't particularly comfortable with the same risks that have been taken before, well, that's fine. And by the way, can I just point out, I am an enormous hypocrite on this. An enormous hypocrite. And I'll tell you why. Because I listen to the stories, particularly in Broughton Park, of what the old boys used to get up to before we played. Maybe like a decade before I played senior rugby. Like the fighting, the thuggery, the stamping, the violence. And I would want no part of that. So I'll put my hands up and say... You know, even though I'm saying that, hey, keep the game as it is now, I can also appreciate the changes to the game which were made in, say, you know, the 90s to stamp out all of, you know, the actual thuggery were probably very, very positive. But, you know, I just thought I'd...
why that word reasonable measures is important.
And, yeah.
And just, you know, sorry, this is like right in my wheelhouse with like... psychology and shit, so I won't labour any point, or try not to. But rugby exists, as many sports exist, to satisfy the natural urge that predominantly, as you point out, young men have. Mm. It's like, evolutionarily speaking, you look at the animal kingdom and, you know, lion cubs will fight each other, stags will butt heads. Rugby does that for human males, as ice hockey does, as boxing does, as all these other sports do. So, yeah, to sanitize it too much is actually to remove the reason why people do it. And that some people aren't comfortable with saying that, but that is just the facts.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly agree with that point, that you do not want to sanitize the game. The game has always been a risky game. It should remain a risky game,
yeah.
As in it's exciting. It's a physical battle, and we've got to keep that.
Yeah, exactly.
I fall maybe slightly on the other side of the boundary from JB, in that I think a lot of the changes that World Rugby have made have tended to be okay, and I think they probably go about things broadly in the right way. Maybe not always, but I think there is good intentions there. Yeah. Just one other point I want to make, because I think it's a really interesting one, is the point, Timmy, that you made about the coddling of the American mind, to kind of use a phrase that has been used elsewhere.
Well, that book by Jonathan Haidt is well worth a read for anyone. That would be a definite read.
Yeah. So I've read the initial paper. Was it an article in The Atlantic?
Yeah.
I've read the initial article. I've not read the full book. But I did read a book earlier this year called Wayfinding, which is about the psychology and indeed the brain chemistry of how we read maps and find our way and navigate around the world.
Hmm.
And one of the things that looked at is quite an interesting read. One of the things that looked at was the sphere of trust for kids now from their parents, compared to their parents and compared to their grandparents. And I'll get the exact distances wrong, but the broad intent correct, which was, if kids over the last 20 years have been allowed freely to walk, say, 100 meters from their home, their parents would have been allowed, so perhaps our generation and slightly older, would have been allowed to walk 1.5 miles from home, and this is, I don't know, say 8 through to 14, and their grandparents would have been allowed to walk, well, up to 10 miles from their home without consequence. And there is one of the things that the book is looking at is there is real world consequences, like long-term developmental consequences, from having such a limited outlook, a limited horizon,
couldn't
limited
more,
exposure
right.
to risk.
Yeah, couldn't be more right. So you're quite like this. This is
but just before you move on, just to echo one thing Phil said, World Rugby have done a lot of things very, very well in this area. And one that's been in the news a lot, which we don't need to go into, but I'll just say that the way that they have dealt with very systematically and very sympathetically, but I believe come to absolutely the right conclusion, is the trans issue in sport. And they've been a beacon in the world of sport. They've been in a leadership role, and the way that they've dealt with that should actually fill us with a bit of confidence that they can navigate what might be tricky terrain.
Yeah,
well,
I'd have no confidence whatsoever that that position will stick. Zero. I think that is the initial position. I don't think it'll last. But there again, it's not really my battle. I couldn't care less. So you know, do what you want. Just on Phil's book reading. So the other day, Phil mentioned that did you read a brain injury book?
Yes, that was actually one reference. So the Wayfinding book got me onto that brain injury book.
Right, okay. So Phil read that brain injury book, and he mentioned it on the other podcast. And I thought, bloody hell, I need to up my game. I'm reading a lot of books, but I tend to read the same subject over and over again. I've not really expanded my mind at all, so I'm going to get myself a new book. So I asked a few friends of mine who I respect their opinions of interesting books that they read, and they've given me some great books on philosophy and whatnot. Do you know what I picked in the end, Tim?
Hungry Caterpillar.
Not far off. It's called The Death of the Territories, How Vince McMahon Dominated Wrestling. So,
wow, awesome.
So I will come back to you with some nice little wrestling references at some point.
Amazing.
Love it. And one that's an end.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, one of the things that he did to revolutionize wrestling attracted families in by sanitizing wrestling. So I don't know. Maybe don't listen to Vince McMahon just yet.
We're not getting better than that. We're not getting better than that.
Yeah, when life imitates art.
Right. I think put these proposals on hold, because there are actual concrete proposals, and I've scanned through them. I know we've only read them on WhatsApp so far, quickly. So why don't we digest them properly and come back to this on Sunday?
Agreed. Perfect.
Wonderful. What are we on? What on earth have we are on? 54 minutes, a very brief podcast. Anyone want to talk about anything else before we go? Yeah.
No, I'm going to go to bed.
Okay, I'm going to catch up with Love Island. Tim?
I'm actually going to the gym.
Are you really?
Nice. Say, late session.
Say it again, Tim.
Sorry?
Say that again.
I'm going to the gym.
No, the other thing you said. Oh, sorry. I thought you asked how much did I squat clean today. That was that was 122. 122 kilograms today.
Well done, JB.
Thanks, mate. Thanks.
Very good, mate. Very good.
That's not bad, is it? Where are you going to the gym?
So why?
No, where?
I'm going to the... I've got... for the times I'm based in London, I've got myself Pure Gym, so I can go to wherever I am, and I'm going to the one by St. Paul's today.
Wow.
Because I don't need to start till late in the morning, and I work all evening.
Why not?
I'm just going to go and shift some tin now.
Excellent. And you get empty squat racks too.
Yeah.
For curls.
And and the Olympic platform with the red, yellow, red, blue, yellow and green weights will be free as well. Feels better. Just lifting those just feels better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently we have an Elenco employee who listens to this podcast.
Oh. I've had an email from him. Don't worry. All good. I'll fill you in.
Yeah. Well, if Tim doesn't fill me in, whoever you are, get in contact with me immediately, please. Right.
Okay. It's all right. It's in hand.
All right. So you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. Tim is at Cocker. This podcast is at Rugby Podcast. You can find us at the North Dorset Sevens. We've got the live show, so go to North Dorset Sevens to find out about that. We need one more over 35 player. If you are that person, we want to hear from you. And after all of that public service announcement, I'm happy to say that we will be back on Sunday as well. So from me, Tim and Phil, have a very good night and see you Sunday. Goodbye.
Good work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.